Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang nammami. One of the great sayings of the Buddha is that he only teaches dukkha, suffering, and the end of suffering. Reminded of that, that was in one of the newsletters from Ajahn V. And certainly that's something we should always keep in mind, what we're here for. This is the first talk after my own 15-day retreat, and I mentioned to a couple of you that the very first morning, just after finishing the Patimokkha and getting things ready, having a rest, waking up early in the morning, and could hardly get up because I had a bad back. It must have been Mara kicked me in the back while I was sleeping at night because he knew I was getting into my meditation retreat. So that was just like a painful experience, but it was really good because it means that you could use a lot of contemplation about, you know, physical pain. And that was just a reminder of other pains and other suffering and how to deal with it. And this is the essence of the Buddha's teachings, is that realizing that suffering exists, not just physical suffering, but not getting what you want, disappointments, getting things happen to you which cause you pain, misery, disappointment, or whatever, or the many types of suffering which you know very well, and also the types of suffering which we were just reading, the list of people suffering from cancers and death, and all the other sufferings which you have experienced yourself or know are liable for you in the future. When you reflect upon those things, that we have sort of reactions to suffering, and it reminded me of just a book which is down in the, actually in my tray, it came from Jake, about the Christian response to suffering, which was a very difficult one, because if there's a compassionate and all-powerful God, there shouldn't be any suffering. Why does he allow people to suffer? And that reaction to suffering sort of causes a lot of angst for people who believe in a powerful God. And I do remember just one of the only times when I approached the subject of religion with my own father and asked him whether he believed in a God. And he categorically said no, and the reason was, he said, because, you know, he was in the city of Liverpool during the Second World War, and not only saw just, you know, the bombs raining down many days in a row and seeing many people dead, you know, their bodies torn apart by those explosions, and the suffering which happened afterwards, you know, the people had lost their family members, and even worse, those who were injured and mutilated, and seeing the people who went off in the ships and never came back again. And just the whole suffering just said he could not believe in any God anymore. But nevertheless, you know, there still has to be some sort of reaction to the suffering, and just the belief in a God doesn't work. And one of the great things which has motivated many people to come here and ordain as monks is actually to at least see that that problem is not sort of swept under the carpet, it is faced squarely, and that a sort of way out of that suffering is offered. But the way of the Buddha taught, you know, the truth of suffering was just such a huge big picture when he started expressing it's not just the suffering in this life, because, you know, some people do get away with it, so it seems. They do seem to live peaceful and happy lives. And, you know, they live a certain age and then they die in their sleep. And people think, that's how I want to die. And so that's why they sleep a lot, to give themselves more chances. But no, that's not the solution, because I don't know that if you stick around me as an upatak for long enough, or if you become a senior monk yourself and actually have to go and see the situations which people get themselves into. And these are just ordinary people. These are just quite smart people, wise people. Well, let's just take an example of just one of the people who we chanted for. Because on Monday, Shirley came up and told about her daughter. You know, the ladies have got these two beautiful little twins. And I check up a lump in her breast and might have mastectomy, may get even worse and die. You know, just like some of you know, Silvana, who died during the Range Retreat, just having given birth to a young kid, Bodhi, just, was it 1 or 2 years of age? And you see that so often, you think, these are really good people, they're smart people, they're wise people, and it still happens to them. And this is just the surface of, you know, the suffering which you see in the world. And one of the things which the Buddha encouraged us to say that we are liable to such suffering as well. We are liable to the cancers. There might be that cancer growing in us right away. Or you get, you know, poor Ajahn Wayama, who's doing so well just leading the nuns' monastery, and has got this cerebral disease which no one can find out what the cause is, but certainly knows that there's some deterioration in the brain, which has meant that she slurs her speech, and sometimes, you know, she loses some motor functions, and very, very tired. And, you know, there was a person who was giving some great talks and supporting and leading, and it causes huge amounts of difficulties and problems. And because of these things that we can actually focus on just the difficulties of our life, and even, you know, oneself, you know, starting a 15-day retreat, worked so hard to make sure that everything was reasonably well settled and everything was okay, and then the first morning having this quite severe back pain, you know, which was making it difficult to meditate. Now the thing was, the advantage of being like a monk and having trained for so long and being immersed in the teachings of the Buddha is that, yeah, that suffering is there. Number one, you don't feel guilty about it or blame somebody. It's not as if you did something wrong. You understand that this is the nature of life. I've often sort of quoted sort of the experience when I was with Ajahn Chah of when this man came to see the great teacher. And this man was a soldier who'd been wounded in the army. And he was asking Ajahn Chah, why did I sort of take these bullets? Why me? Why did this happen? What karma did I do in the past to have been wounded so badly in the Thai army? And that was where Ajahn Chah, with sort of wisdom which cut to the core of things, said, the karma you did to get shot was to join the army. He said, that was the karma you did. Because when you join the army, that's what happens. People shoot bullets at you. You shoot bullets at other people. And some of those bullets are going to hit. That's what happens when you join the army. And so sometimes we say, why do we get cancer? Now, why do we get, you know, diabetes, MS, and all these other sort of problems? And the reason is because you've taken birth as a human being. That's why. So that's part of the contract, that when you take birth as a human being, you're liable to get cancer, you're liable to sort of get dementia, you're liable to get all sorts of diseases eventually, cancer, skin cancers, heart disease. This is par for the course. For those of you who've escaped so far, don't take it for granted. If you live too long, the cancer's going to get you. This is what happens. And when you actually see that's part of being born, it means that you don't sort of blame yourself, you don't blame others. You take the mental pain of guilt or blame away. I know that's one of the great things with being a Buddhist teacher, that when people do suffer and they have their own sort of suffering, or they suffer because they see the pain in others and they take their pain and put it into their own hearts, and they cry and they lose sleep. In the very least, you can take away this terrible blame game of guilt and anger. You see that so often, you know, that I should have taken my wife to the hospital earlier. I should have looked after my kid. I should have eaten better. I should have exercised more. I shouldn't blame the government, blame your parents, blame this and blame that. And one of the important parts of Buddhism is that we do take responsibility. It's no one's fault. It's not the fact one was in the wrong place when those bullets were flying. This is just par for the course. You must accept this will happen. And accepting that it will happen means that one takes away that one level of blaming others or blaming oneself. And you can't underestimate that. I know that somebody was quoting one of our monks here from the US who say Buddhism in the United States is just so close to psychotherapy and psychiatry. But there's no denying the sort of the psychological insights of Buddhism, which notices that many of the sufferings of life come from our guilt, lack of self-worth, blaming ourselves, or transference of that guilt onto other people like our parents and teachers. And I know, sort of, in the role as an abbot, you know, sometimes that transference of your own suffering goes on to me, if not onto me, on somebody else who's in charge. If you're working in the kitchen, it'll be transferred onto Kim. Whoever else is a leader, who is a boss, sometimes your suffering which we experience ourselves, the way we deal with it is to blame someone else, is transference. And of course that is not an option which really works. And that's not how the Buddha explained that we should confront, understand and transcend the truth of suffering. We understand it's no one's fault. It's not our fault, it's not our parents' fault, it's just life, this is it. Now, samsara sucks, this is how it feels, this is what it's always going to be. And it's an important consequence when one doesn't blame oneself or others or the situation. When one understands there's no one to blame, one understands that it's not the place, it's not the person, it's not you. So you don't go running around from one place to another thinking that some other place, some other situation will be somehow different. Sure, the type of suffering is different, but the basic suffering is the same. I can't resist telling one of those stories that I do to lay people, because I know that sometimes, I've taught this story so often to lay communities, but sometimes as monks, sometimes you're sitting next to me and you hear it, and sometimes you haven't sat next to me and you haven't heard this, and some of these stories I'm quite surprised that monks haven't heard, and that's the two sisters who were here some years ago. And one of the sisters came, both came for counselling, they still come, see them every now and again. One had trouble with her husband. She was just so upset with him, and she was seriously considering separation and divorce. And she wanted my advice, first of all. And so I gave some advice on strategies which could maybe help. And then when she was finished, I talked to her sister, and her problem was she was single, she was trying to find a partner in life. She'd get boyfriends, you know, she's young, pretty, Thai. And she'd get boyfriends, but only 1 or 2 weeks, and they'd dump her, or she wasn't happy with them. And she was just trying and trying and trying to get a soulmate, a partner in life, and never could. And of course, those of you who heard the story before know that my suggestion was, well, your older sister's got a husband she doesn't want, you want one, so swap, for goodness sake. And then, of course, from that point on, then I started talking about that. Elder sister, you've got what's called husband suffering. That's what it's like having a husband, being in a marriage. And if you get rid of your husband, you won't have that husband suffering anymore. You will have what your sister has, single woman suffering. You won't escape from suffering, you'll just change the flavour, that's all. And you lady, who's, you know, is single, you have that single woman suffering. If you find a partner and get married, you will have husband suffering next. You won't be free from suffering. And I said, that's the same when people, you know, who are sick, and they want to get rid of their sickness. And yeah, their sickness is gone, and they don't have sickness suffering anymore. They have healthy suffering. And so those of you who are healthy know that, what it's like to be healthy. It's a different type of suffering. People who are poor want to be rich. They win the lotto, they have rich people suffering. People, you see people who, you know, have been through marriage, they've been through separation, they've had wife suffering, they've had marriage suffering, they've had single person suffering, and some of them have rich people suffering, they've been there and done that. And so then they want to come and become monks and nuns. And I tell them, look, you know, you're just going to change lay people suffering for monk suffering. And then you become a monk, you just change monk suffering for lay suffering when you disrobe. Don't think that you're going to escape from suffering. All you're doing is changing the flavour of it. If you don't believe me, just ask those monks who have disrobed. If you don't believe me, you people wanting to ordain, ask the monks. It's just changing one form for another suffering. Because it's not the situation. You can't blame your situation, you can't blame yourself, you can't blame the parents. It's something deeper than that. And this is why the Buddha's teaching was actually confronting it. Just changing the outside, changing the situation, changing your health, changing your wealth, changing your kuti, even changing the state of your body to make it sort of stronger or fitter. It doesn't end suffering. It just keeps on going and going and going in a different form. And that is why the Buddha was actually sort of saying, just been there, done that, there must be some other way to understand this suffering. And especially at that particular time, they understood, there were truth to which modern society is in denial to, that this is not just one birth, it's not just one life. You know, you may have a good time this time, a reasonable little suffering, but it's still, you know, too much for most people. And then you have to go through it all over again, and all over again, and all over again, and all over again. There's that story which I read about the person who was born in the hospital in New York, coming out of the womb and actually spoke, and the words he spoke, "Oh no, not again." And sure, that's, you know, what I would say if I got reborn again. Oh, I've just blown it. That's stupid, stupid, stupid. Oh no, not again. And that contemplation, just sort of, now this suffering, just keep on going. Of course, most people would, if they don't sort of have the response of being angry or blaming somebody else, and thinking that, okay, that if I sort of do it right next time, I fix myself up, or I get rid of these other people, or change my situation, and those sorts of things, if, you know, then I can get happy. You know, sometimes you can't change the situations. They try and fix themselves up. They try and fix themselves up by being more of a control freak. If you've been hurt many, many times, if you really suffered, sometimes people's response is, I'm not going to allow that to happen to me again. So I'm going to be just more demanding, more controlling. I'm going to really take charge from now on, so I'll never allow that to happen. And you find those people who react to suffering just, you know, with this more willpower, you know, it's the willpower born of fear, they find that that gets them even more into suffering, a different type of suffering, but still it's an internal pain where they can never let go, they're always on their guard. You always notice that people who are the control freaks, you know, the dominant figures, the one who shout at other people, who one try and use whatever psychological or physical means, you know, to control others and get their own way, they're all run by fear. You know, the fear of the suffering, the fear of the pain. And of course, that is their reaction to the sufferings, the dukkha of life, and it does not work. They just transfer, they protect themselves from the external suffering, but they've got the internal suffering which they can never escape from. It is true that you can run away from people, but you can't run away from yourself. It's true that you can sort of sometimes control the outside world, but it's controlling the inside world. That's where the sort of the problem lies. And that's why with Buddhism, this is the great teaching of the Buddha. Yes, suffering exists. It's nothing to do with the outside. It's nothing to do with the situation around you. It's not your parents. It's not sort of your monastery. It's not the situation you are in externally, whether you're a monk or a lay person, whether you're old or young, whether you're healthy or sick. That's not the problem. It's the attitude you have to that, the inner response. And that starts to become this samadhiti. That's how we respond to what we experience. And that's not the experience itself, because the experience we can't change. We can't change this world, although most of us spend all our life trying. We can't change the world, but we can change the way we relate to it and react to it. That is in our power. A control freak tries to change the world, tries to change their situation, always moves around from one place to another, from one monastery to another, from being a lay person to a monk to a lay person, single to married, married to single, change the place where they stay, always running around. That's called samsara. You know, samsara means wandering. Sometimes it's called perpetual wandering. It's a very beautiful word to describe, you know, our world, our life. One life after another, wandering, wandering, wandering. You can see that, you know, many of you have wandered, you know, from different countries to here. And you'll be wandering out again later on. You know, back to your homes, back to different countries. And there's so much wandering going around. And that's what most people's lives are like. And so, you know, if you're a person like that who can never sit in one place, stay in one place, you can imagine what it's like when you try and meditate. The mind is just going to follow your natural inclinations. They're always going somewhere else, wandering. And that is the reaction which many people have to suffering. Always wandering somewhere else. Thinking that someplace else, the next moment, the next meditation, the next year, the next situation, that there I will find happiness. And the Buddha sort of said that they'll never find happiness there, in the outside, in the next moment. The only way to find that happiness, you know, the Buddha said, was, you know, just this thing which moves you, which keeps you wandering through samsara. You know, the gas or the engine. You know, the gas is avijja. You know, the engine is craving. And it just drives you. And after a while you just get really pissed off with being driven around all the time by this force. You know, from one place to another, from one experience to another, from one attainment to another. And after a while, you know, you say, this is just hopeless. And there comes a time when you just, you know, just stop the engine of craving. And this is where you just stop and be still. And just, instead of running after things, or running away from things, you just stop and face this moment. This is, you know, this beautiful word stop is one of my favorite words. That was a teaching which the Buddha gave to Angulimala, for those of you who know your Buddhism. Angulimala, this brigand, this murderer, who was chasing after the Buddha. And the Buddha was somehow running faster than Angulimala, using psychic powers. And Angulimala shouted out, "Stop, stop, monk." And the Buddha said, "I've already stopped." And it didn't mean to stop killing. That word stop was far more different than that. Stop running after things. Stop running away from things. And face up to reality. Not some theoretical reality, you know, some abhidharmic reality. But stop and face up to the reality of this moment. And it's always like finding the truth in this moment, in whatever you're experiencing. That's one of the great teachings of the Buddha, one of the great insights which you will have, if you haven't already had, that in this very moment, no matter what you're experiencing, there is all the Dhamma, all the peace, all the wisdom you can ever need, just in this very moment. You don't have to search for the truth or for insight or for jhanas or for anything outside of this moment. Which is why that, you know, we focus inside. And you can see that that's what the Buddha said, going against the stream of craving. Craving, desire, is, you know, fueled by avijja, but it's fueled by the reaction, you know, the stupid reaction to suffering. Thinking that in the next moment, if I move over here, move over there, then I'll find a solution, an end to the pain in the heart. But you find out it never ends that way. In fact, it's that craving, that movement, is the very cause of the pain. And there comes a time when you stand your ground. You face the enemy. Instead of running, you turn around and stop. This is what we call like going inwards, inwards to the moment, inwards to the pain. And certainly that's what I was doing when I had sort of severe back pain. just sitting with it, going into it. And that's a common Buddhist practice, with physical pain or with even mental pain. Instead of having the depression, the anxiety, the fear, the anger, or whatever else is the mental state of negativity which we experience from time to time, instead of actually running away from that, what we do as Buddhists is actually stop and face and go into it. Sometimes I call that making peace, being kind, being gentle. What it means is we face up to it, we don't try and get rid of it. As I was saying to JR just while we were upstairs waiting for the telephone course, at one of the other talks which I gave over in UWA a couple of weeks ago, it was a couple of religious people talking about religion and law. And the Jewish rabbi began by saying something quite strange, that in Jewish law, sort of most doctors go to hell. And he explained himself by saying, I'm not quite sure if this is true, this is what I heard, hope I didn't get him wrong, but he said that because if you're a doctor, you're obliged by God to cure people, and if you fail, you're in big trouble. And sort of I mentioned afterwards that the Buddhist attitude, or the Buddhist response to that is, it's not a doctor's job to cure people. That's not his main purpose in life, or her purpose. A doctor's main purpose is to care, not to cure. So they're to look after that person, you know, before them, to care for them. If a cure happens, that's wonderful. But if the cure is impossible and they're about to die, they care for them to make sure that they die peacefully and well. And if the doctor remembers that that is their purpose in life, that's a job description, to care, then they won't get so depressed or frustrated. And sometimes they can get very concerned and frustrated and very inwardly angry when they work so hard, maybe like a kid, or sort of a young wife with babies, or some of the people we chant for, where they try so hard but nothing works and the patient just dies, and they feel just a failure. They were a doctor and they could not keep this person alive when they had such what they considered to be a purpose for living. Kids to look after, families to look after. But if they think that, they haven't understood their job. Their role is to care. If cure happens, wonderful. If it doesn't happen, at least the person dies beautifully. And it's exactly the same the way we look after our minds and our bodies. We care for our bodies, we care for our minds. And if our mind, if our body is healthy and well, that's wonderful. But if our body gets sick and has pains, back pains or whatever, tummy aches, we care for it. So at least, you know, the body feels like it's being looked after. Sometimes there's diseases which we cannot solve, we cannot cure. And each one of us will eventually get those. But at least we can be kind to them. We can make peace, we can be gentle with it. It's the same with some of the mental things which we face. Mental problems which we face from time to time, sometimes if you go around trying to cure them, trying to get rid of them, trying to make them disappear, you'll find they get worse. And you get so frustrated. You've been trying to meditate, you've been trying to get rid of your restlessness, you've been trying to get rid of your negativity, you've been trying to get rid of all these other things which you count as negative stains in your mind. And you're trying to get rid of them, you're like the doctor, the Jewish doctor who's trying to cure things at all costs. And that is not your job. Your job is to care, to make peace, be kind and be gentle. And you'll find that's far, far, far better. If you don't get enlightened in this life, at least you've been kind and caring for your mind, and you'll have a wonderful time. You'll probably make much progress and get a beautiful rebirth so you can try again next time. But you know how to do this. by making peace, being kind, being gentle, by caring. And that's what we always do to even the negative states of mind which we have. You may be really angry at somebody in this monastery for what they did or said or what they didn't do. What you can do is be kind to that anger. Make peace with it. Be gentle. Learn from it. We don't fight it. Remember that story I've often told about the one time when I went to stay with Ajahn Mahabua for 1 week. And when he sort of gave one talk, it was translated into English. I've seen a copy of it, but the translation doesn't do justice to the Thai, which I understood perfectly, where he recounted when he had a fever with malaria, and being the eternal tough monk, the boxer, he was a boxer before he ordained, he decided not to give in to his fever. When it came time for the chores, he just got up from his sick bed, perspiring, weak, took up a broom and staggered down the rows, sweeping the leaves, using his considerable amount of willpower. And he thought that's what a good monk should do. I'm not going to give in to these diseases. Mine is much stronger. And of course, the story went that Ajahn Mun saw him and blasted him. You stupid, stupid man. And he said, this is not what Buddhists do. Buddhists don't fight the diseases from them. Things rather than running away from them. You can learn from them. If you are kind to them and make peace and be gentle, then they stay with you long enough to be able to teach you. So you can learn, not just from the sicknesses in the body. You know, I learn a lot from the pain in my back and the lot. You know, first week, it's got much better now. I learned quite a lot, you know, from that pain. So instead of trying to get rid of it and thinking, why does this happen to me? I only get 2 weeks a year. You other monks get 2 weeks at a time. You get 6 weeks all in a row. I only get 2 weeks. And the first day, I got this damn back pain. It's unfair. You know, I've been there and done that long enough. And if you start thinking like that, you know, you just make it so much worse. I said, thank you. Thank you to that pain. I can actually learn from you. This is my teacher. So Mara must have been really pissed off at me for reacting like that. So you actually accept, make peace, be kind, be gentle, and learn from these things. And these are the opportunities, and not just physical pain. It's actually easier with physical pain, Buddhism. And they think, gee, you know, I've got lust. I can't just let lust be. You know, I'm a monk. But no, be peaceful, make peace with it, be kind, be gentle, learn from it. Don't try and just stomp it out and get rid of it. It will just come back again. And sometimes it comes back with a vengeance. So contemplate it, learn from it, be kind, make peace, be gentle. And of course, one of those other great similes, which, you know, which is from the Udana, just totally changed, not totally changed, it's got a little bit of a core in it, which is what the Buddha said about the demon in the emperor's palace. And I won't sort of tell you that, it's in that Opening the Door of the Heart, but it's brilliant, brilliant, brilliant simile, you know, which I use in my meditation. I don't just teach these for other people and just don't, as they say, walk my talk. I actually do this, what I say. And so that whenever there is a negative emotion in there, disappointment, frustration, anger, being fed up, if you're kind to it, just like being kind to the demon gets smaller and smaller and smaller. When I was making peace and being kind, being gentle to my backache, it started to disappear and it got less. So I know that's what happens. You're relaxing the muscles, you're relaxing things, and the tension of negativity which you put around physical pain is relieved. And you all know that's what the Buddha said. There's two parts of pain, the two arrows, the mental arrow and the physical arrow. And the mental arrow, you can take that out. Physical arrow, you can't do much about. You get old age, you get sick, you get flus, you get cold, you get sore tummies, you get cancers, you get all this sorts of stuff. Even if you haven't got any diseases, sometimes you put a router through your hand. If it's not bad enough already, people do these stupid things. But it's just life, that's what happens. So when those things happen, just make peace, be kind, be gentle, learn from it. It's an opportunity. And it's mental things as well. You have like schizophrenia, you just have depression, you just have just really being fed up, you have restlessness, you sloth and torpor. Don't fight it. That's actually like the Jewish doctor. I'm maybe being hard here, but this is, you know, not all Jewish doctors, obviously, but this is just, you know, that type of idea. I've got to cure this. I've got to get rid of the problem. Instead of doing that, we care for it. And as we're caring, we learn so much. What actually we do when we're caring and we're learning? We're actually seeing just this demon disappear in front of us. We find out the whole problem disappears. And we get this beautiful sense of peace. Now, how many times I said the way into deep meditation is wisdom power, not willpower. And the wisdom power, where does that come from? It comes from being able to face things. This is where we get the insight from. And insight isn't a thought, insight is a feeling. Insight is a feeling of peace and freedom when things just disappear and calm down. We're seeing into it and seeing just how these things are fed by our negativity, by stupid attitudes, by awija. And if we cut that awija out, then everything just settles down. We can make peace, we can be kind, we can be gentle. And if you do that full on, it's just tremendously powerful. And you can meditate anywhere, with anything, at any time. So you can always make peace, be kind, be gentle, no matter what you're experiencing. Sometimes you can't always watch the breath. Sometimes you can't always get nimittas. Sometimes you can't even just sit in one place for a few minutes. Sometimes that's the nature of the body. However, you can always make peace and be kind, be gentle with this moment. And it has to be with this moment, not in the next moment. That's the all other thing, this teaching of the Buddha. It is the Pachupana Dhamma, a Dhamma of this present moment. Right in this central experience of now, and how this experience is with negativity, with joy, being blissed out. And I had my share of bliss moments of my retreat. Whatever's happening there, you just make peace with it. Be kind, be gentle. And certainly in some of those bliss states, sometimes that's hard not to indulge in them. But no, I'm making peace, be kind, be gentle. Okay, you can stay if you want, you can disappear if you want. And then they really take off. Just believe you me, just this is a practice which works. And which you can apply just to anything which you're experiencing. Get a schizophrenic episode. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. And the whole thing just unwinds. Unravels. You know why? Because this is all fed through craving. Craving, desire, controlling, wanting. Of course, you know where all that comes from, the idea of a self. That's why it's so difficult sometimes to make peace, be kind, be gentle, because it's undermining you. But you know you have some sort of insight. You've done, all of you, because the reason you're here is because, you know, you've felt some sort of peace, some sort of stillness. There have been times when suffering has just vanished, or at least diminished quite a lot. Simply because, you know, your attitude has changed. You've let go, you've made peace, you've been kind, and the problem is gone. So you know it works. I'm encouraging you this evening to actually to do it more. When you have a right attitude, you'll find that that is how the suffering finishes. And it's not just the moment-to-moment suffering. A lot of times that people come into the practice of Buddhism, because they have problems and difficulties they want to sort of solve in life, some sort of meaning in life. And they do it for these, you know, superficial reasons. And then after a while, when you find it actually works, and you know, the problems of life, whether it's physical problems or whether it's the mental problems, you find that they diminish because you practice, you know, with wisdom. You do actually let go, you are making peace, being kind, being gentle, you are going against the stream of craving, stopping, just being here and caring for this moment rather than trying to cure it. You find that works so well, you just take it further. And that's when you find out the deeper experiences of suffering. This whole world is created by that craving. You've been running around so much. You've created so much, and you've created the situation you're in right now. This is the result of your karma. And you've got a body, and you've got this mind with its tendencies. But you can see that it can all stop and end. When you're kind and peaceful and gentle, the problem disappears. The demon vanishes from the emperor's palace. Not just the suffering, but your whole sense of self, built upon these years, these lifetimes of controlling and making things happen, and then just vanish. They always say a person who's got lots and lots of kindness, lots of compassion, is a selfless person. Even like Westerners who have no idea of Buddhism, always look upon the kind people as being selfless, and there's a connection there. The more you can disappear, just the more you can be kind to yourself and others. The bigger you are, the bigger the ego. You know that. I've seen some big egos. I've met some important people. I must admit, I know this may be controversial, but the biggest ego which I've ever encountered, or maybe just at that time he had a big ego, was John Howard, former Prime Minister. And I met a few Prime Ministers. I'm not sure, maybe that was the mood he was in at the time. Now, he was just huge, sort of ego. That was just, you know, the sensitivity of myself. And I've met Hun Sen, I've met sort of Thaksin and all these other big shots, but he was the biggest. Actually, Hun Sen was pretty big. Thaksin wasn't that actually big. But anyway, shouldn't really go into those things. I might get assassinated or... But then you go to these monks which you've met, and you met an Ajahn Chah, or as somebody was asking me today, just of all those monks who's got the pictures on the wall of the Dharamsala, which one did I like the most? Was my favourite. And so, well, next to Ajahn Chah was Ajahn Tate, because he was, you know, two times which I went to stay with him and see him, he was one of these monks, he just wasn't there. And that was just an amazing sort of sensitivity, the polar opposite of like a prime minister, the control figure of a country. You went into this room. Just these are experiences, and when you have the opportunity to meet great beings, you'll always be there. And not only does it stay with you, you know, it's a wonderful opportunity and a great privilege, but it teaches you so much about what this path is all about. There was this old monk, he was suffering from cancer. And the king of Thailand had built this palace around him. They called it a mandapa. You know, that's one of the buildings, you know, a pavilion, a royal pavilion in the sort of the suttas in Pali. I'm not sure whether this mandapa was anything like in the time of the Buddha, probably not, but it was this very elaborate building built by the king of Thailand. And, you know, when I went in to have a meeting with him, he's so famous, you had to sort of wait in line. And when you got in there, you saw, it's actually with Ajahn Yana I went, and you saw in this huge, elaborate room, you looked in there and you couldn't see anyone at first. This big, empty room, and then you saw this old monk on an ordinary little seat, just in the corner, just looking out onto the Mekong River. And he was just so not there, so empty. And that sort of really inspired me. Not so much what he said, but you could actually feel just there was a fellow that these people, they built all this stuff around him, and it just didn't belong there. He was actually, you know, in the cave, in the river, under the tree, you know, the forest monk, who was, you know, surrounded by luxury, but certainly, certainly, certainly not part of it. And you can see just that's how he was reacting. He just made peace with, okay, the king wants to build a palace around me. I can't control kings. Let it be. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. He was such a peaceful, kind and gentle being. And he always used images like that. And I sort of bring those images up. And then when I'm sort of faced with any sort of problems or difficulties, you remember that. Yeah, you're in luxury or you're in difficulty. People are stupid and do silly things. Or people are just so inspiring. You're in a palace or you're in a hell. But you're just sitting there, just not part of it. Making peace, being kind, being gentle. Realizing you can't cure these things. You can't make the king do this or that. Sometimes it's out of your control. That's what you do, do it. That's why when these people come and can you sprinkle me with holy water? It's a waste of time, I know that. But you can't control them. If you say no, you know, sometimes they get upset. Or you get, you know, just having to give kids haircuts. I mean, this is a stupid thing. What's a monk doing giving a baby boy a haircut? All this other rubbish you have to do. But you just sit there and you can't change these people. It's just too much effort. So you're just making peace, being kind, being gentle. It's important if you're in a position of authority. You know, that no way I can change you guys. So I'm not trying to cure you. I'm just trying to care for you. Making peace, being kind, being gentle. That's why I think somebody said, why didn't you shout at us from time to time? I just can't do that. Except actually to call your attention. I shouted at Bhumai because I just wanted to need him for something, but not because I was angry at him. Bhumai, come give me a hand. So, this is how we actually practice to react in an appropriate way to the suffering of life. Not escaping from it, we're facing it. We're finding it just vanishes when we make peace, when we're kind, we're gentle. We're not running away, we're not going anywhere, we're not sort of changing things. We're actually stopping. And as we stop, it's not only suffering, but the whole world disappears. And all these meditations are, they're just what happens when you stop. When the chase ends, when the pursuit of happiness is given up. And then you have all the happiness you ever wanted. More than you ever thought could exist. The experience of stopping is bliss. And you also know that this is what happens, how the whole of this wandering finishes. Stopping in the moment means that when you die, you'll stop again. And this is the greatest stopping. It's so hard for people to understand that just, you know, nirvana is complete stopping. Where there's no more movement, there's no more existence. Existence is doing things. To be is to do. When you stop doing things and you stop, then this whole concept of being is totally vanished. But as soon as you talk like that, people start philosophizing and thinking again, and get into all these arguments on the nature of parinibbana. But at least you can know from the experience of every moment. And the suffering which you have from day to day in your life, it works. You run away, you dream, you fantasize, you try and have sensory pleasures to block off the experience of the now. It doesn't work. It's just like the person who gets into alcohol or drugs to escape from suffering. They only put off the reckoning. It always does come the time when you have to give up that alcohol, when the drugs don't work. Those things are what's part of what's called the law of diminishing returns. First time it's really good. Then it gets less and less and less satisfying and less satisfying. Like even sex or movies or music. It's the law of diminishing returns. You can't escape. After a while you have to face this moment. Sometime in your journey through samsara, from birth to birth, sometimes you think, I've had enough of this running away. I'm now going to stand my ground. I'm going to face this moment. And all these teachings of the Buddha are there to help. Stop and face whatever you're experiencing, whatever it is. You don't have to wait for it to change. You just face this. Make peace with it. Being kind, being gentle. And you find that that is a way out of samsara. There is a way out of suffering. But that way out of suffering is not controlling. It's not getting negative and angry. It's not running. It's being still. And there you find in this very moment, this beautiful whole out of samsara. That's what the Buddha taught to Ananda. These are the okasas out of suffering. The hole, the opportunity to escape. And the mentioning the talk to Pachalananda Devaputta. This is actually how we escape. So, if you're having suffering, big or small, and if you're still awake, if you are still here, then you have that suffering. Remember how to deal with it. Running away, trying to change things. It just exchanges one type of suffering for another. It doesn't really get to the core of things. And again, your job is to care, not to cure. And in that caring, all of the end of suffering actually happens. And then you can actually be free. You've all got to do it sooner or later. Just like going to the dentist. The sooner means the less pain. And that's actually what the Buddha meant by suffering and its end. So that's the talk this evening. Very good.
Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho Sanghaṃ Namāmi.